Sheriff's Conference, and I'm going to be next there, and I'm glad to be able to honor myself, and Sheriff's there, and represent that field. Just got back to reflect with our corner to conduct business here this time, inside of Sheriff's Conference. That would be great. Please say thank you. Before I begin, I'd like to thank Doug Bridges, the House Press Recording Secretary, and Eric Olson Edwards for the general allowing for staff in the committee today. Thank you everyone for your patience. It was not the ideal schedule we saw last time. We went through so much work, so that took about 1 year here. We have to be back. So we will continue where we left off. Just on Tuesday, here at SB 132, Vice Governor Hall, our senior staff is in the room. We will hear a presentation, invited testimony, and then we'll also be opening up for public testimony. So busy afternoon. We have a following event list for invited testimony of Dr. Tracy Woolman, President of the African American Medical Association, Dr. Hal Wagner of the Board of Veterinary Examiners, Dr. Nelson Pretty, owner of the Alaska Mobile Veterinary Service, and Dr. John Basler, owner of College Village Animal Clinic. We also have Laura Curlo, Director of the PAMP, on the phone, and here is a foreign person in our level. I will update my notes. Good to see you. And then we also have Director Chambers here with CBPL with us today. So, in the interest of time, we have some time to make up. I would request some of those home confessions until after the presentation and ideally after invited testimony. So, I want you to have your paper and pens there, so keep track of things that you want to inquire about. I'd also like to note that I will need to wait briefly for a bill hearing at around 3:20, and I'll be passing the gavel over to my colleague, Russ Arnold. So with that, we'll get started. It's my understanding that Dr. Roy and Dr. Geiger will be going over the topic, is that correct? Okay. If you would like to move forward, please. And I think you know your journal, if you put yourselves on the record, and you can begin when you're ready.
For the record, my name is Dr. Tracy Moore. I have been a veterinarian for 32 years. My career has become best food animal medicine, companion animal practice, at length distant in the animal pharmaceutical industry, and currently the president of shelter veterinarian locally here for Canada Animal Rescue. I'm here today as the president of the Alaska State Veterinary Medical Association, speaking on behalf of Alaska's veterinarians. I will start the PowerPoint presentation and then I'll turn over to Dr. Hal Geiger from the Board of Veterinary Examiners for some comments. Senate Bill 132, an act exempting veterinarians from the requirements of the Controlled Substance Prescription Database, also known as the PAMP, is strongly supported by the Alaska State Veterinary Medical Association, the Alaska Board of Veterinary Examiners, and the Alaska Board of Pharmacy. On the brief history, the PAMP was established in 2008 as a voluntary database. In 2017, in reaction to the growing opioid epidemic, the PAMP was made mandatory for all federal law enforcement agencies and stakeholders, including veterinarians. It's important to note that at that time, neither the APVMA or the Board of Veterinary Examiners were consulted regarding this amendment. I want to explain very briefly what the participation in the PAMP entails, because we use regularly phrases that I think complicate our research time. Participation in the PAMP involves two primary duties: the clearing system, in other words, considering looking up the history of the controlled substance prescriptions for someone prior to considering prescribing a controlled substance for them or their animal. And then the second part of that system involves, this is removing and entering any controlled substance prescriptions that are made by the practitioner. The PAMP is not an effective database for veterinarians or our patients because it was established for use in human medicine. Animals do not possess any numbers, any social security numbers. These people don't know their birth dates, they don't mention any ownership, and the names throughout the course of their lives. After having a period of confusion at the beginning of the mandatory participation period for brand unions. That we should not be querying the ad hoc because there's no way to look up an ad hoc system, but that instead we should be querying by the person that brings the animal to the veterinary clinic. So that involves deciding which of multiple owners or people in the exam room to query and then looking up their controlled substance history. The treatment pattern that we obtain is not useful for veterinarians because we're unable to interpret it. We are not trained in human pharmacology. We don't have appropriate drug choices, drug doses, or time frames of treatment. So we're not able to determine from the data received by the person if those prescriptions make sense or if they should be considered suspect and we should be reconsidering. Prescribed. So in essence, it does not change. Clearly, we can things that change what we prescribe for an animal. By the same token, the data that we enter about animal doses, should we choose to prescribe a controlled substance, is not interpretable by our medical doctor colleagues because they are not trained in animal drug doses or selection of drugs. They would not know if the prescription was appropriate or something that the owner should be being observed. In addition to those concerns, clearing a human PNP application by veterinarians is an invasion of privacy. Veterinarians are not turned in or bound by HIPAA because we do not enjoy any client-patient confidentiality with our patient's owners. I would ask the representatives to look at this list, the slide, which is a partial list of some of the common medications that we would be able to do. Often I share through carriers in public areas of our clinic and ask yourself if you were taking any of these medications, if you would like someone who is not your primary care physician to be aware of that. We're often asked, if we take veterinarians out of the PNP, what kind of controls will we have over their prescribing behavior? The answer to that is that veterinarians are also already very closely monitored by the DEA. Anyone who holds a drug enforcement agency license must keep very strict records documenting every controlled substance that comes in and goes out of it. Every pill, an oral formulation, every drug of an injectable formulation must be accounted for. And these records must be made available to DEA officers or to local law enforcement upon request. In addition, manufacturers and distributors of controlled substances are bound by know your customer type laws that require them to have suspicious or monitoring systems in place. Much like a credit card company would notify you of unusual purchasing patterns, suspicious or monitoring systems track veterinary clinics. Purchases of controlled substances and flag drugs that are outside the norm that is currently for that practice or compared to similar sized practices in the state. And those flag must be investigated. So there is DEA oversight to control open diversion from licensed professionals. There are four other things that exempted veterinarians from participating in their PNPs, including taxes that were formerly mandated by their participation but have been repealed due to the problems with surveillance and the lack of identifiable benefits to public health. The primary reason that there is a lack of identifiable benefit to public health is that veterinarians are not a source of the drugs of concern. Surveys out both in Alaska and nationally have shown that veterinarians account for 0.3 to 1% of the total opioid medications prescribed. Less than 1% of opioid drugs out there are prescribed by veterinarians. Even if we were to imagine a worst-case scenario where every veterinary pharmaceutical or controlled substance prescription were misused, we would still be less than 1% of the problem. Of the 1% of opioids that are prescribed, the vast majority of those drugs are not drugs that are being sought by addicts. Veterinarians do not use Oxycontin. We do not use Vicodin. We do not use methadone. We very rarely use fentanyl, and we and we do get on exclusively is in the hospital and given to our patients. That would not have access at the epidemic primary opioids that are used by veterinarians are buprenorphine, which is a pain relieving medication that is actually used to treat opioid addiction, which Representative McCurdy can attest to. Our hand ownership of the treatment facility. And the second most common one is hydrocodone, which is used instead of a fortified cough suppressant, which is used to treat severe cases of collapsing joints during adults or chronic bronchitis. Neither of these drugs have substantial abuse potential, bringing the possibility of large amounts of hydrocodone, but this medication is not commonly prescribed. There is a natural barrier to veterinary shopping, since the current veterinary care are paid for benefit on a weekend. And Dr. Meyer is going to speak about more thoroughly, so I'm going to leave that. For those of you who have tracked this bill through the Senate and examined the document on file, there are a large number of lawyers, I guess, from veterinarians and doctors. And we're supporting Senate Bill 132 for all of the reasons I've enumerated. I apologize for the error. At the time these slides were submitted, there was only one letter of opposition, which subsequently has been accepted and submitted by the Executive Director of the Alaska Medical Association. But the letter of opposition from the NPR physicians primarily based on the possibility of veterinarians becoming a problem in the future. The paper that they cite looks at possible veterinary shopping, which is defined as someone obtaining prescription for the same drug for their pet from three or more veterinarians over the course of a year. And they look at that trend over a 5-year period and report on what sounds like an alarming increase, a 3-fold increase over that 5 years. We actually read the paper. The increase was from 0.2% of veterinary clients obtaining 3 or more prescriptions for the same medication over this period up to 0.6%. We're still talking about well under 1% of the prescriptions that are possibly related to veterinary shopping. Although, if someone wants to discuss it, I can think of a number of reasons why that would explain that increase over that time frame that are probably not related to veterinary shopping. In summary, there's no credible evidence to support that veterinary drugs are contributing to the opioid crisis, and there is significant evidence to suggest that they are not. Again, I'm going to Dr. Geiger is going to speak because he is on the board of the examiners to the substantial increase in investigative costs of veterinary examiners since PDMP participation became mandatory. And you will also comment on the fact that Alaska already has the highest agency fees in the country, and that increasing those fees compared to the cost of the PDMP investigations is putting a substantial burden on our practitioners. Exemption of veterinarians will allow us to continue to provide appropriate and timely medical management for our patients. It will increase the efficiency of the PDMP for its intended purpose by allowing accurate interpretation of data that has not been muddied by animal data and animal joint operants. It will allow us to continue the already judicious use of controlled substances and eliminate unnecessary and disproportionate business burdens for veterinarians.
Yes, thank you. As I am Dr. Alligator, I'm not a veterinarian. I've not lived any veterinarians, and I've been interested in kind of veterinary practice in Alaska or anywhere else. I'm a retired brand statistician. I don't know much about swine or poultry diseases, but I do know something about databases, something I've been involved in for probably 40 or maybe 35 years. The reason why I'm here, I'm maybe one of the only non-veterinarians, or maybe only non-veterinarians, who studied up close the effect of implementing the meat and beef for veterinarians over the last several years. I'm in my second term as a public member of the National Board of Veterinary Veterans. And so I really want to stress that, and I have no interest in this other than an interest in developing the town of the veterinary board. With my time here, before you, I want to make 4 points. I want to make the point that the PVMV is not working, has not been working, and we're not able to make it work on the Board of Veterinary Veterans. I want to point out that the information that people tell me that they want on the PVMV that we obtained would be much more cost-effective and simple way. I want to give you some sense of the waste, the expense, the unintended consequences that I've observed on my time with the Board of Veterans Veterans. I want to make some comments on a statement that was made by Patrick Chambers and Mark Cuomo in their testimony on April 26th. When I say that PVMV has not been working on the veterinary side, I don't mean it's a nuisance or veterinarians are just not put behind it. I mean, over and over at the Board of Veterinary Examiner meetings, we found that the operation that's in the database on the veterinary side is incomplete, corrupted, unreliable, and more importantly, the information is in the database in such a way that we cannot extract summaries that's useful to us in any way for any decision. But this should be a time, I hope, you'll take some time to ask yourself, really, what is it, the goal of this whole program of ending the engineering to be part of this? So I'm going to return to that point. When I say the information people say they want in the PVMV is already available, the points are to make the DEA is reporting all Schedule 2 and Schedule 3 drugs in the veterinary hospital. That's been going on for a long time, it's continuing to go on. All drugs that are going into the veterinary hospitals are being carefully monitored by the DEA. People say to me, well, we need the PVMV because if there's diversion out of the veterinary hospital, how would we know? Well, when you sit down and look at this, the point I really want to stress is there's no logical connection between diversion drugs and detecting it with the PVMV. The PVMV will absolutely not help detect drugs that are diverted out of the veterinary hospital. How could they be diverted? So there's no record of them in the PVMV. Prescriptions now, when you're filled by a pharmacist, that information on the pharmacist side is going into PVMV. So, I would hope that you could take some time here now to reflect on what is the goal of having the veterinary involvement and ask yourself if that goal, whatever it is, could be reached more inexpensively, less wasted, and with any consequences. I referred to the slide that the your medical association is of slide 10, if you go back to that. I could consider for my whole afternoon to talk about the weight of the this is the approximate investigation to the time that I've been on the board. It's been going up, and I want to say when I first started on the menu board, we would have a meeting, we'd have two or three multiple investigations, if you want to call it negligence, or record keeping or something, and that's what I consider kind of the normal background of the things that the veterinarian should be dealing with. In my time, the investigations needing to go to PVMV was absolutely tripping over everything. Pages and pages and pages were being presented to us, and then as we tried to look into it, say, what was the violation, what went on here? Nobody could tell us. We never really had a good explanation. So we have all these violations that are just formulas. And then we say, well, what's a real violation that came about? Well, for example, a violation might be that a young mother took 3 months regarding her life and a crime violation every day that she didn't report no drugs were dispensed. That would be an example of a real violation, as opposed to these ones we just
discussed. And Dr. Donner, forgive me, I'm going to interrupt you for a moment and take a brief break for me to cross the gag over, excuse myself, and I will return when I'm on the board.
first board committee chair. And we're going to come back to you, Dr. O'Day.
Yes, thank you. I think it's our opportunity to meet. We have the most expensive battery licenses in the country. If that's not true, it was true last time I checked. Where is all that money going? A lot of it is going to just waste, and it's going to be embarrassing. I'm certainly embarrassed from my point of view. And I hear people say, well, we can't give up this orphan cancer system because what if somebody injured and then they get a person injured? Well, I can tell you about my experience. My dog was injured in an accident, broke a rib. I took the dog to a veterinarian. During the examination, he looked through the diagnosis, it cost over $300. And just before I came here to testify, I got online and looked at the site that this street price of heroin in Anchorage, and I saw that the price of heroin is about $15 to $20 for 10 to the gram. So I looked at it, and I understand it. I took my dog to the vet, and I spent $300. I did not get a sample for a $3 to $3. I got another drug for pain relief. If you were drug seeking, would you like to do that? Go to a veterinarian with the possibility you might get some small quantity of drug, or would you just go buy the drug? And I think the answer is obvious. This possibility of veterinary shopping it just does not pass the common sense test. And the other thing that I want to put out in this category, importantly, this system has not turned up one single incidence of drug abuse. We have not turned up one single incidence of drug misconduct or any other potential misconduct. The only thing that we know of that we seem to think we have, the fact that this is flagged in the post investigation, are things that were honestly mistakes or miscoding errors or things that can't really be identified. So, and you know, this has been a waste of time and money, a waste of resources, certainly a waste of valuable resources. And I ask you at least take the time now to think about what is the goal that you're trying to achieve with all the use of these resources in Alaska. I want to point out that I don't agree with some of the testimony that was offered by Director Chambers in order to follow on the evening of April 26th. Director Chambers talked about how they have facilitated conversation to clarify how to use the PDMP and that the Board of Veterinary Examiners responsibilities would make the PDMP workable. Well, I think the most important thing is there's facilitated conversation, and I want to be absolutely clear that I and other members of the Board of Veterinary Examiners do not agree that the system could be made workable by changing the regulation. We believe the system is absolutely out of the field, and we ask you to please take a look at the goals you're trying to achieve and building right differences with this nature. Dr. Chambers has spoken to veterinarians who say that they have made the system workable. I don't doubt that that's true, but I will say that I've never spoken to a veterinarian who said that. Every veterinarian that I have talked to has complained to me about how unworkable it is. And I have spoken to a veterinarian who said that just the unpleasantness of the PDMP determined to take decision to just require what practicing veterinary medicine in Alaska. Laura Carollo said that there have been very fruitful discussions with the board I want to say personally, I don't see that fruit. The only fruit of these discussions seem to be just a pile of products that has come from trying to hustle in and square a bag into a round hole. And I want to say that I know Laura Carollo is certainly trying to make the system work and do what she can, but there is no way that we can make the system work on the veterinary board side. So again, I ask you to please try to think what is the goal that you have in having the Board of veterinary practitioners crammed into the system that was designed for human practitioners. And if you please, try to think of it as a simpler, more effective, and less expensive way to achieve that goal. Thank you.
All right, thank you. Are there any questions for Dr. Geiger?
I'm going to please Commissioner Eric, Mr. Lennon, and I have some interest in reviewing the regulatory burden on this, but letters from the State Medical Association and the College of Emergency Physicians to speak to some of those. And I want to ask about some of that. Are there any questions? I'll ask them about the guidelines for animal supplies for pharmacy.
Well, letters, we have letters on the road to deal with this work.
Pharmacy as opposed to doing the expense from the clinic, or is it required to create the system if we prescribe? And the types of work that the Board of Pharmacy might have done to appeal to try to make this work for veterinarians and so whatever. And through the chair, Representative McCarty, over the last probably 5 years or so on the Board of Pharmacy has met with the Board of Veterinary Examiners to address the questions, just a series of questions.
Prescribing. And it's also cancer resistant, cancer
on crime history, if there is an indicator that the client would be at risk, either because of multiple prescriptions or the same history of opioid prescribing, and that certainly could help that area when we bring up to law enforcement, that might get to the DEA or local police department. But currently, our system isn't tied to the DEA reporting system, so they would have to report to that from them to confirm that there's been diversion because of the PDP.
Thank you.
question, on our third discussion, and I'm going to take time at all with a degree being I have diverted in English. Chair's Bundles and Senator Harris, and we'll be happy to follow it, speaking of our community contacts as the CFA, and help promote the ability to get into our health and our unfortunate standards in this place of change from 2017 to now. That sounds like that might be an important piece of context to try to understand the broader landscape of controls on this regulation. Representative Burton,
you can add that to the chair. So, I'm talking about the CFC, I'm talking about the PFP, which is a great system for the purpose of humans, and I believe it, for this right, that Representative Bottles was saying, and not this very much of the whole thing there. But the problem is maybe, so we're talking about yesterday, if you see the criminal and the burst, was that related to the genetics or the secrets of criminal flagged?
That's a problem generally not specific to the FDA prescribing it.
Okay,
thank you for that. Are there any other questions for the inclusion, not speaking to human, words, the words human that you really point back to, and that hasn't mentioned in the last hearing, is the statutory problems that are making the PDMT very difficult to use? Or is the question like substantial subgrantarians or, you know, the policy call in the legislature be involved? And is it your question, your international investigation, you want to spell, speaks to that? And should that veterinarians be involved? And if so, what does it look like, and how do we continue to really try to make it a usable, fluid system for them? And that could be through any of these stakeholders' rules and responsibilities, statute, regulation, instructions, guidance, and the system. So I don't know if the answer of why, because of all the financial policies we have to. But, you know, from looking at and done that sort of philosophical point, and we'll have the policy power of the legislature. And I'll bring up, because I think it also speaks to other frustration that other legislators this session have dealt with the PDMT in general, is that we are working on an actively, I open on the screen right now, an RFP wanting to bring in a consultant, a third party, a disinterested sort of analyst type of third party, to speak with all of our stakeholders, to talk to all of our boards, to talk to all professional services, to speak with union groups and find out where are your rubs, where does the report make sense, where is this working right, what do we need more, what do we need less of, and then bring that report back to the legislature hopefully before it begins next year, and provide you all with information about really valid stakeholder input and analysis that this direction, we need direction from the legislature on, do we want the PDMP, does the legislature expect the PDMP or the public expect the PDMP to be an educational tool to help instruct or an enforcement tool where you break one of these violations of statute and you get investigated and perhaps fined and so forth. And the right now it's kind of all the above. But that wasn't too.
Mr. Geyer with the veterinary examiners to say that the investigation is perhaps where people are not using the system correctly, but on the other hand, it seemed to be fundamental problems of comparing human beings that are traceable with pets and animals that are not traceable, that even if we make it convenient to use, we're still not reaching a worthwhile goal. Is there any administrative opinion on that?
Okay, for the chair, in consultation with all your presentations to the board and conversations with the board, there have been instructions developed and made possible for the board to promote publicize so the PDMP can work in a way that maybe isn't intuitive, but this is how it can work. I'm not saying any of it's going to be perfect, but yes. The PDMT is not designed to see a dog's prescribing pattern. You know, a dog is not dog seeking. But if a person comes to drop off a dog or pick up a dog and they're also picking up a prescription, then that person is linked to the PDMT because that is where the thing that the universe cares about is happening. So the implanted prescription or branded drugs. Are controlled substances, and so that percent is really the link. So we rely on this information to try to help that be the way that the veterinarians can utilize the system. Again, not saying it's perfect or smooth or ideal, but it's usable, and veterinarians do use it if they follow the direction ask them to, you know, help us get the yes, I guess. You want to say to you guys. The investigation is under that the legislature is very clear. Thou shalt register. Thou shalt check. You know, there's a long list of things that veterinarians are required by law to do. And we can't know if some of the downstream things are happening, if people refuse to register, or if people don't let us know when they're on the time to leave for 3 months. So we can say, you don't have to report. If they don't follow the instructions on how to use the P's and P's, we can't help them. So, again, it's not pointing fingers, and I don't think any of us want to point or be on the other end of a point of view on this, because we've just all really tried for a long time. The tools are out there, but whether they're being used or whether they're even great tools, that's kind of where the impact is. Scheduled medications, I believe, as scheduled for me. So if those are being prescribed, then the prescriber who is prescribing me those drugs would have to query. Okay. All right. Do you have one of those questions? I just want to make sure we have one of the medications. I feel like this guy is in relation to it. So I'm just asking a quick question. Chair, representative party, that's not entirely true. PCP board chair is meeting really just started last year as its own entity. I think all issues mostly dealing with the medical board. So while the veterinary board chair is there and participating and raise issues and can ask for help and get respond, it's a little PDP, it's not veterinary PDP meeting. So that's not really, that's not an accurate number. And the governor and the legislature have already to our board of enrollments increases. So part of this, yes. I think the last, that was about $1,000 for the last fiscal year of PDFP related increases, but the veterinarians have not paid those, and that's any other amount is more than non-PDFP related dollars here.
So, during the presentation, you mentioned that the opioids that veterinarians use are actually not the major problem ones. And I guess you have your percentage here. Of the opioids, what percentage of those are prescribed by veterinarians? So, if there's 500 opioids out there that are a problem, and say 80% of the problem, then people will be using opioids. But overall, the ones you describe, how much do you need to put up with a problem?
That's a crazy word, to be fair. I'm trying to make sure I understand your question. My opinion is the major drugs of concern for us, heroin, which obviously no one prescribes, methadone, and fentanyl. Veterinarians do not use oxycodone or methadone or Vicodin. The only drug on that list that we would ever use is fentanyl. And that drug is almost exclusively used in the hospital where it's given directly to the patient. That would be extremely rare. It needs to be sent home to the patient as a patch. Very rare anymore because of the opioid epidemic, because fentanyl has become such a concern that it would be even. I've never prescribed fentanyl in my career. And most general practitioners would say the same thing. Fentanyl is primarily it's a very heavy pain medication, primarily used for very specialized procedures such as back surgery, very severe orthopedic procedures that would be done in specialty hospitals. Really, the drug will be sent home, or that drug will be used in the hospital until they are able to be sent home. It can thus outweigh the fraction of the total opioids out there are prescribed by veterinarians. It would be hundreds of thousands
of opioids. Okay, that's all. Okay. Yes. Well, this is a Dr. from the veterinary part of it. I couldn't make a point, though. So here, I mentioned tramadol, and there's an excitement about tramadol and tramadol is being used. We're going to have tramadol is almost never used in veterinary practice. Dr. Ward can comment on that. The other important point that I want to make about that, when people get scared about tramadol is a scheduled 4 drug, and so tramadol is not going into the PDMB database. So if there is diversion of tramadol, if there is bruxing in the tramadol, that would not be this being your new work somehow, there has to be a logical connection between what you're trying to achieve and the actual factors that you put in place. Whatever it be, you never detect the diversion of crime law, and there probably isn't any. Thank you.
We don't have any factors on the questions or anything like that. We do have measures of security or factors to exercise the medicine of that. That's what I'm telling you, they're doing is just a standard thing to form on this however from physicians, but we don't have any question. So earlier I asked, if you didn't have to query the database before sending that prescription from a pharmacy, is the pharmacy to be under regulatory purview? And he's going to ask him, just want to follow up on the line question. So, presumably, it would also remain regulatory benefits if that did not have to log into the PMP and the facility did not prescribe the credit company. The other thing for you to consider taking. If I just don't know what I'm saying, she's priceless.
Chair Representative, to clarify, zero reporting is only required for various participants. The current directives know those of us who write prescriptions or children in the pharmacy are not required to daily report.
I see.
So that's a small proportion of the areas who actually still dispense those drugs.
Thank you. and it's very unfortunate. But I want to point out again, there's no way that that would be detected or prevented by veterinary participation in the PNPR9.
Okay.
Okay.
That's the
Chambers invited some of the out-of-touch with the numbers of one of the 21 bullets she oversees or
harm for Larry Gary. He's doing a good job of solving a problem that does not exist. Members of the Gary Committee have been sitting on East Bay Randy Way in Liberty Commerce for the last year, refusing to allow hearing. There's been ample time to deal with HB 91 and SB 132 prior to the last 3 weeks of this session, and certain committee chairs chose to hold it. We have been playing a game of political fetch with your colleagues, and each time we return with the request we've needed, a new harm is ready. It has been a busy endless process. We may have been misled and disrespected all along the way. I am saddened by what I have witnessed. It is the deep responsibility of elected officials in the nation who are hoping to debate and educated discussions with colleagues and constituents. I am embarrassed by the shame that is privacy pertaining to elected officials being afraid to take positions for fear of repercussions from their senior, biased, more powerful legislators. Such behavior from the town of Home Decor. It is shameful. No one elected by the people should behave more actively than they seem.
Can you focus
your thoughts on the content of the legislation that is before us? There is a shattering aspect of all of this is the fact, but here's another fact, that the most vulnerable members of our society who need and deserve our love and support, that is, those addicted to opioids, are being used as pawns to further the political objective of individuals who refuse to be influenced by those facts. Do you really want to help addicts? To cut the resources being wasted on the feeding of the requirement for better hearing so things that can actually do something. Children, housing, law enforcement, marketing cuts, need like you. The PDOP participation requirement for better hearing does not need to be amended. It needs to be abolished immediately. Each one of you should start your support for SB 132 and HB 91. From the bottom of my heart, thank you for respecting me and my profession enough to hear my testimony today.
Thank you. Thank you.
articulated it. Thanks for questions. All right. Thank you. And
thank you.
myself available to testify today. And actually, that morning, I wrote to Dr. Peter Nicholson, who is a house insurance engineer. I'm Dr. Mary. Dr. Nicholson, can you go ahead and introduce yourself in the record and proceed with your testimony?
Sure. My name is Peter Nicholson. I'm a veteran in Anchorage, and let's just get straight to it. The biggest problem is that employing with the DDOP is trying to track individuals. There is no real legal adaptation. So for anybody who's going to vote on this bill, I'd like them to imagine that they are but the head of the Department of Motor Vehicles.
Thank you.
so the entire house was hung over head to go back on the house floor at 3 p.m. So we welcome that, but there was no janitor's purpose to do that anymore because members of this individual committee were trying to interfere with their passive in this middle of the hearing of testimony. Literally, the entire house was on the house floor preparing final passage of legislation. We're still resulting in having a collective legislative session. There's plenty of time to pass legislation. We're enjoying everybody's testimony, particularly as it's focused in on the content of the legislation. I just want to remind everybody that sometimes people like to think, particularly in the last couple of weeks, we've been very busy. We're having school sessions. Originally, you know, we can start time, we can start any time, and we just were on the floor for at least about 4 hours on Tuesday. So, we were over 5 hours. I can't remember exactly, but we went back on the floor at about 3 p.m. So, that was what took up our time in house, basically, on Tuesday. It wasn't a good thing for us, interesting, and we have some sharing with the video, and I think that's just important to get out there for the public. All right, next up we're going to go to Susie Rowan. If you go ahead and introduce yourself and try to get this to your testimony. Thank you. working schedule, and I'm not going to reach outside for further consideration.